Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my home.
We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. So he can play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, welcome back to another joyous edition of the Steelers Hangover, the Behind the Steel Curtain Day After Call-In Podcast. I'm Jeff Hartman, editor of Behind the Steel Curtain, and with me, as always, is my good friend Brian Anthony Davis. How are you this Monday night, Brian?
Can you feel it, Steeler Nation? Drink it in, man, because it's five straight, and you just swept the Bengals. That's how I feel, Jeff.
It feels good, and there's a lot to talk about. And, you know, before we get started with, you know, our thoughts on the game, I want to tell you, if you want to call in, you certainly can. The phone number to call in is 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581. And as always, all the podcasts on the Behind the Steel Curtain podcast platform titled The Standard of the Standard are brought to you by Frank Walker Law. Frank Walker, one of the best criminal law attorneys in the Pittsburgh area, the western Pennsylvania area, and even northern West Virginia. You can contact, I'll get all his information at frankwalkerlaw.com. We're going to hear more from him later on in the show. As we always start the show off, Brian, is your knee-jerk reaction to the game. The game ends, all zeros on the board, Steelers win 24-20. What are your thoughts?
You know, first and foremost, Jeff, I'm going to tell you this. I think Frank should set up shop in Cincinnati because there's a lot of criminals wearing black and orange over there. He could probably do very well because when you think of doing something stupid, you think of the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, as excited as I am for this win yesterday, it makes me wonder, did the Steelers beat the Bengals, which they did, or did the Bengals beat the Bengals, which they also did? That's a team that came out fired up. You know, you look at the other blog sites for Cincinnati fans, they abhor the Steelers. They hate them more than you and I, more than all of Steeler Nation. They hate them more than Baltimore hates Pittsburgh. I truly believe that. They think that Pittsburgh is a team with a lot of money, which they're sorely mistaken right there. A lot of money just to pay off the refs and pay off the league and have the league in their pocket. And they also think, and you saw the videos that they posted, I mean, we posted over here, they think that Pittsburgh is the dirtiest team in the league. You know, Marvin Lewis jumped in, jumping on Mike Mitchell, which Mike Mitchell has been suspect, but Mike Mitchell brought up a point yesterday that, you know what, I'm not as dirty as you think. I haven't been fined. I haven't been suspended. So with that being said, this is a delusional fan base. This is a delusional team that thinks that they were slaying the ultimate demonic dragon in Pittsburgh, and they felt great about it in the first half, and they were going crazy, and they were feeling it, and they went ahead and tried to mess with the terrible towel. And you know what? I always talk about the terrible towel curse, but essentially it's not a curse, Jeff. What it is, it's the fact that it fires the team up. It's a symbol. It's like kicking somebody's mascot. If you're the Georgia Bulldog and somebody goes and kicks Uga in the face, that little bulldog, that sweet little bulldog, you know what they're going to do? They're going to get fired up and go for your throat. And that is what fired up Pittsburgh. That's why they won that game. Now, that game was not crucial for the division title. We know what the crucial game is. To win the division, you have to beat Baltimore. However, that was crucial for the state of mind of the Pittsburgh Steelers and the fan base of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the reason it was crucial was the fact that they had to beat a team that is always a thorn in their side. They were not going to beat them dominant. You're not going to be dominant over a team like Cincinnati. Cincinnati, their record shows that they're a bad team right now. They're not a bad football team. They're an undisciplined football team, but there's a lot of talent on that field. As undisciplined as Burfict is, he's an amazing defender if he just can get his head out of the way. That's the problem with a team like that. But they had to beat that team. They had to send a message. That's another statement game. It was a statement win to say we could go into an ugly territory on an ugly day and have an ugly win. Look, if you want style points from that game, you're not going to get it. Look, I want to beat out The Rock for Sexiest Man Alive, and I should, but, you know, it isn't going to happen. The Steelers aren't going to go and dominate a Bengals team, but they're going to make a statement. They made the statement, point made, on to Pittsburgh on Christmas Day and on to the Baltimore Ravens in the division title, my friend.
Absolutely, and you know, you brought it up. I want to talk about this because to me, it's kind of laughable, and that is the curse of the terrible towel. Now, for anyone that checked behind thesteelcurtain.com today or after the game, I wrote a really quick article. I didn't spend as much time as I would have liked on the article, but it was one of those situations where timing is everything. And clearly, if you're privy to the statistics on that article, timing was everything. And it was basically just a quick rundown of this quote-unquote curse of the terrible towel. And I remember back when T.J. Houshmandzadeh wiped his cleats in 2005 with it, and I was like, oh, that just rubs me the wrong way. To me, you know, you said it's like kicking a mascot. To me, it's like when someone does something to the American flag. This is your country, and you live here, and this is what you're a part of, and when someone does something like that, it's like they're doing it to you. That's the same thing with the terrible towel for me. This is the Steelers flag. It is emblematic of the organization of Myron Cope, one of the legendary figures in the organization's history. And so you do that, and it's crazy to me how these young players, they get it really quick in terms of the significance of that flag, that terrible towel. And you saw some young players talking about how they didn't like that either. But I remember I used to kind of chuckle at it when he was, hey, you mess with the terrible towel, that's what happens. But then I remember, I want to say it was 2010 or 2011, that was when Ray Rice took the terrible towel and had it over his head as he walked off the field. He's like, oh, he should know better. Well, you know what happened in the playoffs that year. And then it was in 2012, I believe, when Lendale White and Keith Bullis, they beat the Steelers at home. They were blowing their nose with a terrible towel. They were stomping on it. And they didn't win a game after that. They just fell apart. That was when Vince Young was a quarterback for Tennessee. And now this. And you're seriously just sitting there thinking to yourself, I guess maybe this is real, but it's not a curse. Like, it's not like the curse of the Billy Goat or the curse of the Bambino or anything like that. It's just what I said. It's essentially that the Steelers players themselves certainly view this as something that is serious. And if they view that, if you mess with that symbol, that figure, that towel, you're messing with them and you're messing with the organization. And so for me, it is real. In that sense, it is real, and it's prideful, and it gets someone fired up, and it makes you wonder, like you said, why would you pick up the towel? Like, just leave it be. There's no reason. I think they went up 20-6 maybe on that interception. I'm not saying on the interception. Yep. It was on the touchdown. And there was no reason to give the Steelers any fuel to the fire, which was barely even alive, and then after that we know what happened. But my knee-jerk reaction was I was so pleased with this win. I was more pleased with this win than the win over the Bills, and I thought that the Steelers essentially played better against the Bills. I think because it's a division rival, it's on the road. I thought Ben Roethlisberger played a very good game. I don't think he played a tremendous brand of football. It wasn't one of those dazzling 6-touchdown, 5-touchdown performances, but you're not always going to get that. And the one, in my opinion, the one knock on Ben Roethlisberger has been that he's kind of been like a roller coaster ride. It's either good Ben or it's bad Ben, and there's very rarely the in-between. And what you saw on Sunday was the in-between Ben. And that in-between Ben is good enough to win if he doesn't turn the football over. You know, his statistics were not out of this world, very mundane. I think he had like 21 completions, didn't throw for 300, maybe 286, had a touchdown, no picks. He managed the game well. He made plays when he had to. Obviously, the big throw to Ladarius Green. Unfortunately, he got concussed on that play. We'll talk about the injuries here in a second. And then the big strike to Eli Rogers. But people forget, too, is he should have had two touchdowns in that game. That throw to Antonio Brown, which was negated by the Le'Veon Bell chop block, was a beautiful strike. I mean, that was a bullet. And that was one of those great Ben Roethlisberger-Antonio Brown connections that he throws the ball before he's out of his break. Antonio Brown is just otherworldly when it comes to being a receiver, and he's able to make the play. So he technically, I think he should have gone over 300, but that throw would have had two touchdowns. People would have had a different dynamic about the game and his performance. So I thought he played well, and the Steelers' defense shuts out the Bengals in the second half. And I feel like they really believed what their coach was saying. And Mike Tomlin said it at halftime to Evan Washburn, who was on the down the field. He said, look, this is not about what the Bengals are doing. This is about what we're doing, the penalties, the missed tackles. And he said, if we cut that stuff out, we will be fine. And I guarantee you, he went into that locker room at halftime and said the same exact thing. There's a reason why players, to a point, after the game said, we didn't change anything. We just kept doing what we were doing. We just did it better. We did it the correct way. We were tackling and, you know, obviously doing all those little things well. And then all of a sudden, they come out and they shut him out. Now, the penalties are still an issue, and I'm sure someone will bring that up when they call in. But nonetheless, the Steelers win a gritty win. They get a gritty win on the road. And this is exactly what people always criticize Tomlin for. He can't win the road games against sub-500 teams. Well, Bengals sub-500 team on the road. Roethlisberger on the road. He has one touchdown, zero interceptions. That's a step in the right direction. That's proving a point. That is a statement win. And now it's set up. And like you said, Brian, the game really didn't matter. But it does matter in a way. Because if the Steelers would have lost this game, then Week 16 would have been basically for all the marbles. Whereas if the Steelers lose in Week 16, and I don't know who wants to talk about that, but if they do lose in Week 16, if the Ravens were to get beat by the Bengals in Week 17 and the Steelers win, then the Steelers still claim the AFC North. So not all is not lost because they do have that game cushion. But this Week 16 game is turning out to be one of the biggest games in regular season Heinz Field history, I would say in the last 5 years, if not a little bit longer, because it just seems like all the cards are on the table, and it's winner go home. If the Steelers win, they clinch the division. They probably send the Ravens packing. I don't think the Ravens would technically be mathematically eliminated from the playoffs if they lose in Week 16, but they would essentially be eliminated based on tiebreakers and things of that nature. So with that said, this game coming up is huge, but I don't want to turn the page yet. The fans that are thinking about calling in want to talk about the Ravens game. I want to do that at the end of the show. We'll save that for if you hear the Frank Walker ad. After the Frank Walker ad is when we're going to actually talk about the Baltimore Ravens game. So stay tuned for that, and we'll definitely get to that at that time. Now, what I do want to talk about, though, are game balls. That's something we always talk about, Brian, after a game, whether it's a win or a loss. Who are you giving your game ball to? Think about offense, defense. You can pick one from each. You can pick just one in general. Who are you giving your game ball to?
You know, I have my game ball selected, but before I get to that, I need to touch on a point real quick, Jeff. Sorry about that. Just a little correction on the terrible towel curse. The second one, it's actually not a curse for the Steelers. It's actually an advantage because when Hushman Zada did it back in 2005, Steelers did not lose again, and they won the Super Bowl for the first time in 26 years. When Lindell White did it in 2008, the Steelers didn't lose another game, and they won the Super Bowl. So that was two Super Bowl wins because of terrible towel incidents. And that's when those towels were actually desecrated. When Ray Rice did it, all he did was really pick it up and twirl it. He didn't desecrate it in any way. So I don't even count that as far as an advantage, but I don't think the Steelers did lose another regular season game that year. But they did go on to win the Super Bowl. But so it's an advantage when somebody picks up that towel and tries to mess with it, because good things have happened when that happens. So I just wanted to bring that up. On to the game balls, Jeff. You know what? I had this this situation a couple weeks ago when I gave the game ball to Randy Bullock. And, you know, you agreed with me and said that was a good choice. And the next night on my Fact or Fiction show, Zach and I got in an argument. And, well, actually a friendly argument like we always do on that show. And Zach said, in no way, shape, or form can you give a game ball to a kicker. That is, you do not give a game ball to a kicker. Well, actually, I'd like to say this. You know, in the history of the NFL MVP, a wide receiver has never won it, but a kicker has actually won the MVP. So with this being said, I'm giving my game ball to a kicker again. Because when you go ahead and you carry a team through the wind, the rain, and, you know, a tough defense, like Chris Boswell did yesterday, and not just chip shot field goals. He did it a couple 49-yarders. He did four over 40 yards, and his high for the year is 49. So he tacked on a 6-for-6 day. He kept them in that game. They kept them believing, and you knew. I mean, I was shouting like, no, you can't. You can't have another field goal. You have to get it in the end zone. But when he was lining up for the sixth one, the fifth and sixth one, I'm thinking, keep on going. Just, you know, if that's what you have to do, get it close. You're still going to need that touchdown to go ahead and put a nail in. But keep it going. If that's what you have to do, that's going to keep them on their heels. That's going to keep, you know, Pittsburgh believing that they're in this game. You're not sacrificing any points in that situation. You're not leaving any points on the table as far as, you know, getting zero, getting nothing out of that drive. So that six drives that they got 18 points out of when, you know, they could have gotten nothing. So that is a victory in itself for me. Boswell, I mean, that guy has ice water in his veins. So if he could kick in Paul Brown Stadium, he's going to be able to kick in late December and in January in Pittsburgh when he needs other venues that are not easy to kick in. I have full confidence in this guy. He started off the year a little bit rough. He really hasn't missed one since. So I'm loving Chris Boswell right now. He is the kicker for the team, and you need a guy like that. You need every point in December. You need every point in January. And when number 9 struts on the field, I know that he's going to get those points. So I'm feeling very good right now. That's my game ball to the kicker.
To the kicker. Okay, that's fine. I understand that. I mean, the guy, heck, like you said, they weren't chip shots. I mean, he had one, I think his shortest field goal was 30 yards. He's definitely worthy of your game ball. I'm going to think outside the box, but I knew you were going to go with Boswell. So I kind of thought to myself, okay, what's a really interesting angle for me to pick a game ball? I'm thinking to myself, okay, what can I do, you know, that's not clearly obvious? Yeah, I'm just going to give the whole game ball to the Cincinnati Bengals defense. Why? Because never in my life, now I'm not, you know, an old guy that's been around for a long time that has seen a lot of football, but I've watched a fair share in my 33 years on this earth, and I'll say I've never seen a team so inept and so easy to just, I guess just to tip them over. That's literally what it reminds me of. It kind of reminds me of that guy that you see him and you know that you can push his buttons. And you know that when you get that, you get him out of his zone, he's done. He can't function anymore. And that was perfectly evident on the four penalties in that game-winning drive. It was, I honestly can't think of any other way to describe it than exactly the way the 2015 AFC wildcard game went. The Pittsburgh Steelers know how to beat the Bengals, just like everyone knows how to beat the Browns, but also how the Baltimore Ravens seem to have the Steelers' number. And it takes you to learn how to get over that. And the Bengals, and largely probably, in my opinion, because of their coach, they have yet to really figure that out. They have yet to really understand, okay, we need to change for the outcome to change. So for me, I'm going to go outside the box. I'm going to give my game balls to the Cincinnati Bengals defense for doing their part in allowing the Steelers to come back and winning their fifth straight game, getting a huge heap of momentum heading into the Ravens game, whereas the Ravens barely squeak away with a home win against the Eagles. It's definitely, in my opinion, a tale of two teams going in different directions, but you and I both know, Brian, living in Maryland, that when these two teams play, everything else is out the window. You could be the best team in the world, and you go into this game and you can't do anything. It's tough sledding. So with that said, with the game balls done, callers, you can call in now. The phone lines are open, 347-850-8581, 347-850-8581. And I want every caller to be prepared. I'm going to ask everyone a question, and it's going to stem from an article that's going to publish tomorrow morning on the website. So be prepared for my question. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but if you wait, you'll obviously hear the other callers answering that question. So let's get our first caller. He's always our first caller. That's why he's our Hall of Fame caller. Vito Mankin from New Jersey. How's it going, Vito?
Gentlemen, good evening. How are you?
Good evening.
Doing great.
5 wins is pretty good, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Here's my only concern, Jeff, and you know I'm a pretty positive guy. When I was watching that game yesterday, the way they were moving the ball on the defense in the beginning was really pretty eye-opening to me. But then I realized when Tua went out, it kind of changed the dynamics as they were moving the ball. They were running it to the side where usually he goes to stop the run. And they were pretty much moving the ball on us with ease. And I think we realized we had to make adjustments if we had a shot at coming back in this game and at least keeping it close. But my biggest concern, I'm sure you guys were thinking about this yesterday, 6 trips to the red zone and all field goals, and we only came out with 1 TD. Yes, I know one got negated because of the chip block, but think about those 6 trips. If 3 of them are TDs, we got that game pretty much in the bag by plenty. So, I mean, that's my only big concern now going into the Baltimore game is, you know, how many times are we going to get into the red zone? And I noticed even when we get into the red zone, a lot of times Ben was throwing those long passes down there instead of taking the short passes to kind of get us real close to maybe inside the 10-yard line and then maybe taking a shot in. But do you guys see that as a concern? 6 trips to the red zone, coming away with 6 field goals. Yes, it's a great job that Boswell makes it. But let's say he only makes 4 out of 6. It's a different game. So my only concern moving forward. Second thing I was thinking about also was, if Darius Screen can't go, we need someone else to step up. So I'll leave it at that. I'll let you guys do the talking here.
Well, Vito, stay on the line because I'm going to have my question for you here in a second.
Sure.
But to answer your question, I honestly did agree with you about the Steelers and the red zone issues. That was a very Ravens-esque win for the Steelers yesterday. I mean, that's very typical to see Tucker, the Ravens kicker, kick 5 or 6 field goals, and they end up winning by some hideous total. You know what? In December football and division on the road, I wasn't too worried. Yeah, like you said, you would wish they could cash in on some of those and score some touchdowns. But ultimately, thinking back on the game, and I hate to say this, but you have to ask yourself this, did the Steelers game plan around Vontaze Burfict? And you can't deny that he is a dirty player, that he's going to take liberties that shouldn't be taken, not at the NFL level, not for anyone that respects the game and that respects the people across the line of scrimmage from them. You didn't see Le'Veon Bell going across the middle. And I don't think that was in any way that was planned. I honestly do. The last 2 years, 2014, it was a going across the middle when Reggie Nelson was the helmet-to-knee hit at the end of the season. Last year, it was Le'Veon Bell on the sweep, which he got tackled on the sideline. I don't think that the Steelers were interested because, like we said earlier, this game was technically meaningless. It wasn't meaningless, but in terms of the division, it was always going to be decided in Week 16 at Heinz Field against the Ravens. But I wouldn't be surprised, and you didn't see the Steelers going over the middle until the fourth quarter when they were driving and Eli Rogers and Ladarius Green started going across the middle. And the Bengals are headhunters, and they're going to do that. And you saw the hit on Ladarius Green was to the helmet. It was high. It was, it was a tough play. But speaking of Ladarius Green, kind of your next question, I think that Sammy Coates is ready. I was really excited to see him get some repetitions, and I think that if Ladarius Green cannot play, and we're going to find out more tomorrow, Tuesday, at Mike Tomlin's press conference in terms of, hey, you know, he's not going to have much news on Green because he's supposed to go through the protocol, and practice participation will be how they gauge his availability. But if he can't go, I do believe in Jesse James. David Johnson has made some catches the past few weeks. Xavier Grimble was inserted back into the offense yesterday, or CS Sunday. And you have Sammy Coates possibly coming back and being a deep threat. This is good news for the Steelers. Now, I would love to have Ladarius Green available, but this is good news for the Steelers from a weapons standpoint, because if you notice one thing, early in the game, they had a couple of nice completions to Antonio Brown, and both of those plays, Sammy Coates was going deep, and that took the top off the defense and left Antonio Brown one-on-one. But, Brian, what are your thoughts on Ladarius Green not playing the Steelers' weapons going into Week 16?
Well, you know what? He has really elevated the team in the last four or so weeks since he's been in there. He has proven to be a weapon that they need. We talked a few weeks ago about Antonio Brown can't be left on an island by himself. He needs some help. And that help came in Ladarius Green. But you're exactly right. Sammy Coates looks like he's back. He was catching some very important balls just underneath to show that his fingers seemed fine. So that's a big deal. Jesse James needs to improve, but I have faith in him also. You do have a guy like Xavier Grimble in there. And when it comes down to it, there's three guys that don't get a lot of balls, but when they get balls thrown to them, they make it happen. And it's David Johnson. That's a guy that you don't think of as a major weapon, but every single game it seems that he has one catch that moves the chains in a big way. And that's number 82, David Johnson. There's two other guys that are just like that. I'm talking about number 83, Kobe Hamilton, a guy that the Bengals dropped. They got him off of the – I believe they poached him off the practice squad, if I'm not mistaken, but they took him from Cincinnati, and he has been clutch for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He came up big for them yesterday, and of course, Eli Rogers is another one. He had that touchdown. He looked really good, so it looks like they are back in sync. They have those other guys stepping up. Remember, with that team, you have a guy that is going to get about 12 targets a game. You don't need all those guys getting 12 targets a game. You need those guys getting 3 to 4 targets a game and catching those targets. And that seems to be what's happening now. That happened more and more as the game progressed yesterday. So I feel really good on that avenue. I'm worried about the head of Ladarius Green just for the fact that we had these mysterious issues. They were talking about being concussion throughout the summer, throughout the beginning of the season. We never truly found out whether it was an ankle, whether it was a concussion. But if he's had concussions in the past, I am truly worried about that, because that's a guy that can make a true difference for that team. So I'm hoping he gets well soon, and gets back on the field. But most of all, I'm hoping that he just gets well, and that just does not affect him long term if he does have a serious concussion, because you see what happens long term with 4 or 5 of them, what can do it to you later in your life. So get well with Ladarius Green. As far as the defense goes, you know what? The defense of the Cincinnati Bengals, they do play dirty. But you know what? When you're in the red zone and you're only getting away with 3 points at a time, that's something that you got to get used to, because that's going to happen this week against Baltimore. It just is. That's the way those games go. You need to get threes in the red zone. Because against Baltimore, because you're not going to get a lot of opportunity to touchdown. You're not going to blow a team like that out either. Just like Cincinnati, they're the same type of defenses, and they're going to be tough to score on. But if you could just take advantage of those opportunities and just get away with points on each drive, then you're going to have a better chance of winning the game, guys.
Yeah, I agree. Vito, what do you think about that?
No, I guess it makes sense. And, you know, look, we don't know what we're going to get out of Ben moving forward. I mean, look, he's 34 years old. He's taken a beat in his career. You know, the body hurts. The body starts hurting, you know, as you get older. I mean, you know, you got to remember, it's a combination of everything, the weather, stiffness, you know, those things could happen. But like you said, he could still make the nice throws when he has to. But I think everybody wants to see, you know, the games where he throws those 3, 4, 5 touchdowns. And like you guys said, it's not always going to happen. Now, can he have a good game this week against Baltimore like he did against Dallas? I mean, in the Dallas Cowboy game, we pretty much had that game wrapped up in the first half. If we stop Elliott from running into the end zone on that big play that he broke through, we're probably up 3 scores by halftime. And, you know, we probably put that game away. So I thought he had a very good game that game against Dallas. We were moving the ball with ease. My other question is, the last few times we played Baltimore in these big games, I don't remember if we even had Le'Veon Bell. We might not have had him because I think he got hurt, so that could be a plus for us as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I know in 2014 in the wild card game at Heinz Field, the Steelers did not have Le'Veon Bell. They did have him this year in their first matchup. But Bell is definitely a different player. The offense is a different offense. Their offensive line is playing better. It's going to be a good matchup to watch because it's a really good run defense in Baltimore. Although they gave up some yards against the Eagles on Sunday, they're going to be up to the test. Now, here's my question for you, Vito, and this is kind of off topic regarding what we're talking about with the upcoming game. The Steelers rookie class, 2016 draft class, has 3 really good players that have played a lot. Javon Hargrave, 3rd-round pick, Sean Davis, 2nd-round pick, and Artie Burns, 1st-round pick. They've all had good contributions. Now, tomorrow I'm going to run an article basically saying that in the past 3 years, it's been a gimme as to who is the rookie of the year. In 2013, it was Le'Veon Bell. No one else in that class would be even in the discussion. 2014 was Martavis Bryant. Again, same thing. Last year was Bud Dupree. Same thing. No one else is even close to being in that discussion. But this year, you have 3 viable candidates. Who would you give the Steelers Rookie of the Year award to? Burns, Davis, or Hargrave?
I'm going to lean towards a tough one. I'm going to take Davis.
Okay. All right. You want to validate that answer, or are you good to use that all you're saying?
Yeah. I think Davis has stepped up big.
Okay, I definitely think that's a good pick in my book. But Vito, as always, we thank you for the phone call.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great Christmas. If you celebrate
yeah.
Hanukkah, have a good Hanukkah. Enjoy the weekend, and hopefully we'll be
talking. Absolutely, happy holidays.
Victory. You guys also, you and your
family.
Let's
hope so.
Good night.
Hey, take it easy. Be safe,
bye-bye.
Vito. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, the phone lines are still open. You can call in at any time, 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581. Remember, if you want to talk solely about the upcoming game against the Ravens, you can do so after the Frank Walker ad. We'll be running that here in the next 10 or so minutes. And so until then, we're going to talk about the Bengals game and really anything else you want to talk about. Let me ask you the question I asked Vito there, Brian. I'm sure you've been thinking about it after you heard me ask him. Who are you going to give the Rookie of the Year award to? Which is aptly dubbed the Joe Green Award after Mean Joe Green's phenomenal rookie season that he had and phenomenal career, which is equated to his number being retired by the team. Is it Hargrave? Is it Davis? Or is it Burns? Where are you headed?
Well, you know, I had this question. This was one of our facts on Fact or Fiction last week, so I'm not going to change my answer. And but first of all, it's a toss-up between 1 and 2. I mean, Hargrave has had a very good start, but he has not shown up in as many games as the young defensive backs, as far as I'm concerned. I love what we have out of Javon Hargrave, but I think you have to look between the two rookies. And my sole decision on this is not who I think is going to have the greater career. I actually think for the long haul and what he brings, I actually think Sean Davis could be an all-time great, but I have to give this award to Artie Burns. And that's a guy that's leading the team in interceptions as a rookie with 3. It's also a fella that is 2nd on the team to Ross Cockrell with over 10 pass defenses on the year. And that is ranking in the upper part of the league. He's actually in, if I'm not mistaken, I need to check my stats article on this, but if I'm not mistaken, I think he's tied for maybe 15th or so, 15th or 16th in the league with number of pass defenses on the year. So he's really doing it and doing it well as far as any of the defensive backs picked in the first round. Actually, let me say cornerbacks instead of defensive backs. He's really having one of the best year, the best year out of anybody that was picked in the first round that is a cornerback. So, and he was the fifth guy taken in the first round. And I would actually, I mean, I know Hargraves in Tampa Bay is having a pretty good rookie year. You have a lot of guys that are doing very well and they're playing very solid. They were picked at that position. But I think Artie Burns is outshining them all. And for that, I actually expect him to make the all-rookie team as a corner.
Yeah. This is a tough one for me, too. And I don't think this is an easy – in my opinion, you could make a case for all three of these players. Hargrave has been in more games and actually seen significant time than both Davis and Burns. Burns has seen more time than Davis. In my opinion, in the five-game winning streak, it's been Davis who has been the major playmaker. I know that Burns has the interceptions. Davis has a pick himself. Davis has a half a sack. Burns hasn't had a sack yet, and he hasn't been sending blitzes too much. I understand that. Hargrave has a couple sacks. Hargrave also recovered a fumble and got a touchdown, too. They all have, like, their little niche that you could kind of hang your hat on and say, this is my guy. It's going to be interesting. Like I said, tomorrow on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, tomorrow morning, I'm going to publish this article, and it's going to be talking about who I give mine to. I give mine to Sean Davis. I just think that Sean Davis is 5-0. When he's in the starter, they haven't lost the game. He's really looked like a major playmaker in the back end, and because of that, that's who I give my vote to. But there's going to be a poll for people to vote on. If he's, obviously, the comment section, I'm sure, will be very loud with people and their respective opinions as to who they think's going to win. But it's a good discussion. It's a good debate to have when you have multiple rookies that are seeing the field, not just seeing the field, but playing well. Well, it is good. It's good for your program. It's good for the organization, and it shows that the future is bright. So if you want to chime in on that, call in. The phone lines are open, 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581. In the meantime, let's hear a word from our sponsor, Frank Walker.
Smart or stupid? Those strobing lights in your rear view? That flashlight shining in your face?
License, registration, and insurance, please.
The little adventure you're about to have with this guy?
I'll need you to step out of the vehicle, please.
Okay, so you've done something stupid. Fix it with a smart move.
For DUI or criminal defense, call Frank Walker of FrankWalkerLaw.com. He knows his way around a courtroom. 412-532-6805. 412-532-6805 or FrankWalkerLaw.com.
For all your criminal defense needs, trial lawyer needs, call Frank Walker or visit his website, FrankWalkerLaw.com. You know, Brian, I really thought we'd have more callers after that big win against the Bengals. I'm sure we have some people listening that don't want to call, and that's fine. There's something I want to talk about here before we break down the Ravens game and start looking ahead. And it's a player that, in my opinion, and I put this in an article in my winners and losers column, it's another player that is he's absolutely beating Father Time. And everyone said, you know, oh, well, it's James Harrison, and 38 years old doing what he's doing is impressive. And I know you've talked about this player before, but Lawrence Timmons, I mean, I don't know what happened to this guy, but he went to the school of James Harrison in terms of taking care of his body and getting himself right. He went from last season, in 2015, he was being pulled off the field in passing situations, and they were bringing in an extra safety. And that's something that they've still done from time to time. But this guy is playing like he is, you know, a third-year, fourth-year player in the league. It's incredible. His hit on Jeremy Hill in the first quarter, I want to say the first quarter, then on the goal line stand, if you want clean yet really vicious physical football, just watch that play over and over again. Two guys, full head of steam, and he stood him up. It's amazing what Timmons is doing. He has two interceptions on the year, two really big interceptions. One, obviously, yesterday off Andy Dalton, which, in my opinion, really changed the outset of the game. What are your thoughts on Timmons and his role in the defense kind of finding their groove?
Well, you know, Jeff, I think it's as simple as the phrase, what about me? Everybody was trying to replace this guy. Everybody was trying to say, hey, we need to move on to the future. Everybody was trying to give Vince Williams his job. And Vince Williams had one of the greatest tweets yesterday. I'm sure you've seen it because I know you put out the article. But his tweet was simple. Something about 94, making sure that I'm on the bench or I'm a reserve once again with a great performance. And did you see that, Jeff?
Yeah, I think you remember Vince Williams' tweet. He's gonna make me a backup for life. I think is what it said.
Okay, what a great tweet. And that shows respect among teammates. They see how hard this guy's working. And I'm sure being around James Harrison in the locker room doesn't quite hurt, because you know that's an infectious type of attitude, that workout regimen. But the guy has been here. This is his 10th season now. He has been here just as long as Mike Tomlin. When he was drafted number one, 15 overall in 2007. But who did people want to talk about in that draft class? Lamar Woodley. All they wanted to talk about was how dominant Lamar Woodley was. And he was. That guy became Rookie of the Year that year. That guy overshadowed a guy like Lawrence Timmons. And people right away were looking at the number one pick like, hey, he's not as fast as I thought he was. I thought he was going to be faster. I remember one of my best friends going to a preseason game and saying, you know, I just wasn't impressed with 94 with this rookie. I mean, I seemed to like the second round pick better. And that's all I heard. You know what? That's all he heard. Then after last season, everybody was saying he was done. But, you know, look. He was still had over 100 tackles. He was still leading the team in tackles. I know that has a lot to do with the position that he does play. But here's the deal. The guy just keeps on coming out and working and working and working. And I think something happened to him this year. And I don't know if this is the exact turning point, but something sticks in my mind. Watching a winded Lawrence Timmons throwing up in Miami in the end zone. And when I saw that, I'm like, oh, that's going to shake you. I mean, guys don't come back from an image like that. But you know what? It seemed like after that happened, it's the same thing that happened when Sean Davis grabbed the face mask in the Dallas game. Both guys, since both those incidents, high-profile incidents, that people aren't going to want to forget, they got better. They didn't want to feel like that way again. They wanted to make sure that they were doing everything they could and not leaving anything on the field. Well, look, I mean, he hasn't thrown up since, so he's not leaving anything on the field. He is leaving something on the field. His body's in his wake. He is just destroying people. He does look like a rookie again. He looks like a dominator. The guy's a professional with great pride. He loves this team. And here's what I love about Lawrence Timmons. This is actually the article that got me to Behind the Steel Curtain. We had a conversation about a year and a half ago when I first met you. I had met you before, but I didn't exactly know what you were doing with Behind the Steel Curtain. And just as an icebreaker, you said, hey, what do you think about the Steelers? I'm like, this year. And this is June. And I said, you know what? I'm really encouraged with what I just read about Lawrence Timmons. And I just read an article that Timmons will take a pay cut. He definitely wants to take a pay cut if it's going to keep him in Pittsburgh for longer than his contract. And you said, yeah, I know all about that article. I edited that article. I'm like, what, are you kidding? But that's the article that got me here. It's because of Lawrence Timmons. And something struck me about him. Just the fact that guy is willing to stay, look, dock my pay. Just keep me in Pittsburgh. That means that he's dedicated to this team. He's dedicated to playing. I don't want to see LT in another jersey ever. I want to see LT after this year. Earlier this season, I started with the end of him with the way that Vince Williams was playing. Now, I don't think that. I think the guy has more gas left in the tank. And I think he's the leader of the team. And when a guy like Hayward went down, we were looking for leaders to step up. We were trying to guess who the leaders were going to be. Guess what? None of us said Lawrence Timmons at that time. And I'm not sure why. But he's the guy that's leading that team now. And he's the guy who has stepped up. And I bet you, if you ask any guy on that defense in that locker room, they will say Law Dog is the man on that defense. Just the same way that they would say that James Harrison is. Those are the leaders. Those are the coaches on the defense that actually put cleats on and helmets and go ahead and knock people down and lead by example. So Lawrence Timmons, to me, is not only, a Pro Bowler in my mind for the second year in a row. I'm hoping he gets the nod. But he is the defensive MVP of that team right now.
Well, for me, everything you said was, I think, 100% fact. And the story you told is a fact. I actually believe I wrote the article that you're speaking of, but I also did edit it, I guess, myself. But still, don't underestimate the fact that Lawrence Timmons is in a contract here. And I think people kind of forget this. The Pittsburgh Steelers ate a lot of salary with Lawrence Timmons this year. I want to say it was over $10 million for him to play this year. I mean, he's making a lot of money. Well, why? They restructured his contract a lot of times. They pushed his all the money into the back half. And therefore, there comes a time when you have to pay the piper. And you either do so the way they did with Lamar Woodley and Cortez Allen, and in the way of them cutting them and saying you're done, well, then you have dead money on the books. Or you suck it up and you tell Lawrence Timmons, hey, here's the deal. Now, they could have, and a lot of people expected them, myself included, to give him a new 2-year deal. They did just something very similar with Troy towards the end of his career. They did it with Heath Miller at the end of his career. I was expecting them to give him that deal. They could move money around. It would keep him in the uniform for at least a few more years. And if they had to go to Vince Williams, you hope that you have him in a contract where you're not breaking the bank to keep 94 on the team. They didn't do that. In other words, they said, you got to show us. You got to show us what you're made of. We were taking you off the field in 2015, and if you want to stay here in Pittsburgh, you got to prove it. And he's proven it. He is proving it. And Vince Williams' tweet was spot on when he talked about how it seems like Lawrence Timmons is going to make him a backup for life. I fully expect now, and you hate to say this, but sometimes it's you got to show me. You got to show me what you're made of. And I feel like Lawrence Timmons has done that. I think the Steelers would be very wise to give him a nice maybe 2-3-year contract. Think about the contracts that Robert Golden, that Ramon Foster, that William Gay got, that they were free agents coming into this season. They're team-friendly deals. Look, Lawrence Timmons, like I just said, he's making over $10 million. I don't have the number in front of me right now. He's making over double-digit million-dollar sums of money this year. He doesn't need the money, and he's even said he wants to stay in Pittsburgh. So maybe they can get him 2-3-year deal, very team-friendly, very cap-friendly, easy on the finances in the early portions of the contract with a bigger price tag in the back end where they could always cut him or release him if they had to. Don't underestimate this as being a contract year, and the Steelers are asking him to show him what's up, and he's doing that. Give him credit. I give him a lot of credit. So, Brian, leaving Lawrence Timmons here and moving on, let's talk a little bit about the Baltimore Ravens. Now, if you want to call in and be a part of this conversation, you can do so. 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581. Those that don't know that might just be listening to the show for the first time, Brian and I both live in Maryland. We're in, as I call it, Ratbird country. And it's not easy being a Steelers fan living in this area, but nonetheless, this game, these two games are big. I have family that are Ravens fans. I know Brian has friends that are Ravens fans. this game means more than just the rivalry between the fan bases. This means more than just, you know, the typical Steelers-Ravens. This could be, in my opinion, the summation of the entire season. The entire 2016 Steelers can be defined in this one game. I got to ask what your gut feeling is about this game. It's still early, but when you think about this game, where these two teams are, what are your thoughts? What is your gut feeling?
Well, you know what? My first part of my gut is going to say this, that I believe we underestimate the Baltimore Ravens a whole heck of a lot. You know, we were on this show last week saying we're not going to talk about the Ravens Patriots game, and we didn't talk about it. But as soon as we hung up that phone and ended that podcast, I rushed to the TV, and I had to stay up a lot longer than I wanted to. And here's something funny: we do a predictions article every week, and we do every game, and it's 23-3, and I'm thinking at this point, like, you know what, I could go ahead and pencil in New England for the win. So I did. I changed everybody's standings for the entire year, the week standings and the annual standings. I did everything. Then all of a sudden, it's like a three-point game. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I just jinxed this game. So here I am. I'm going. I go and I change it again. And then finally, thank goodness, I had to change it again, because the New England Patriots finally sat up and pulled the game out. But what I was watching a Baltimore team thoroughly decimate a half-decent defense of a very good New England team. And I was in the second half, I know there were some fluke plays with kickoff returns and punt returns and some crazy things happening, but once they got their confidence, I'm like, oh, gosh, they look like a steam train. I don't think anything can stop them. And it was just lucky that they were able to stop them, but they were befuddling Brady at that point too. And I know how good this team is. So my gut reaction is it's going to be very hard to run on this team. Do not expect 100 yards rushing out of Le'Veon Bell. But if you can get a good 70 yards out of Le'Veon Bell, and even at another 50 in the air, that's a fantastic game from him against a very good Baltimore. The two guys up front, Williams and Pierce, in the middle of that defense, on that defensive line, that are just absolutely mammoth, and they're immovable. But Pittsburgh has the second-ranked offensive line in the league. They're going to be able to open up some holes too. So it is going to be a very tough matchup for not just the Steelers, but the Ravens too. They're two very good teams. But here's the difference. I respect the Baltimore Ravens more than I respect the Cincinnati Bengals. And the Baltimore Ravens will not shoot themselves in the foot the way that the Cincinnati Bengals do. They're not going to implode like that. They play a lot smarter. But they definitely want to beat Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh definitely wants to beat them. But I think the fact that this game is in Pittsburgh is going to give a major advantage to the Steelers. And it's going to give a major advantage in a lot of ways. And where I think the advantage is, this might sound crazy to you because they're professionals, but it's Christmas Day. And this is where I feel bad for the Ravens. And people say, oh, you can't feel bad for the Ravens. No, feel bad for the Ravens, because the Steelers get to have Christmas morning. It might be early, but they get to have Christmas morning with their families in Pittsburgh. The NFL makes Baltimore travel. They have to be in Pittsburgh 24 hours before that game, so they're not going to be at home with their families. They're not going to have that advantage, and that could be an advantage. It could be a disadvantage, but for me, you know, you still have the magic of Christmas with your family at home, then you go to work. And that would make me feel good, knowing that I got to have that morning and then go off and then play my rival at home, in front of fans. And that is going to be a packed house. There's going to be people that I know, a lot of people going to this game. There's going to be a lot of people, a lot of pals going crazy. And when you see these guys come out of that tunnel clad in black from head to toe, it is going to be just something else. I think those uniforms are actually going to add another dimension just in their psyche. It's going to make them feel like world beaters. when they just come black head to toe and come out. I'm hoping in season's beating. I actually have a gut feeling that the offense will be have a little more firepower just for the fact that they're at home and they're feeling good and they're feeling full in their heart and they're going to go ahead and win this game because this is a very focused ball club right now. I have watched them 2 weeks in a row on the plane after a satisfying road win, and I like where their heads are at, just seeing them in candid moments on those Facebook Live videos that we talked about last week. They did it again yesterday. I just like where this team is at. I think they are all business right now, and I think they are ready to prove it, and they're still making amends for that four-game losing streak that they had. They just broke it with a five-game winning streak. That just they matched it with the four last week, so they counteracted it. Now they went one further. They have their eyes on the prize. This is a team that thinks and knows in their heart that they can win the Super Bowl if everything goes right. And I really feel like that they have it in their head, and it's them against the world right now. That's in their minds. And so I'm feeling it, so I'm behind them. And I really think it's going to happen. But Baltimore's not going to roll over easy. But right now, this is a better ball club. And they are not the team that lost four in a row that had to play down to their competition and had to play up to better competition. They're believing this is good competition, and they're going to play up. So that's how I feel. That's my reaction. And that's what I feel about this game, Jeff.
Well, you know, the funny thing is when you think about it, the last time the Baltimore Ravens played Ben Roethlisberger at Heinz Field, you know when that day was, when that was?
Oh, gosh, that was November of that was the sixth touchdown game.
No, it was the wild card game in 2014.
They lost that game. Yeah.
But before that, I just want to make a point. The Ravens at Heinz Field against Ben Roethlisberger typically does not end well for Baltimore. I want to say Joe Flacco might have only won one game when he goes head-to-head with Roethlisberger at Heinz Field. I do need to fact-check that. I don't want it to turn into a presidential debate fact-checking session. But he doesn't have a good record against Roethlisberger at Heinz Field. And so I think that's important to remember, too. This Steelers team plays so well at home. Even in their losses this year, Dallas, the offense was clicking on all cylinders, and defense just didn't have the stamina to make enough plays when it mattered. New England, okay, they lose to New England. That was with, I still can't believe it, really, but you think about the way that game started with Landry Jones, the quarterback, and that horrible interception he throws in the end zone. That game could have been totally different with Roethlisberger under center. This game is going to be different. Don't think that this is going to be the same ugly, just dismal performance by those teams even that you saw earlier this year at M&T Bank Stadium when Roethlisberger was coming off injury. I think the Steelers, I like the way this sets up. And I said this on multiple podcasts. I said it in radio interviews. I feel like if the Steelers could have handpicked a final three games, they would have picked Cincinnati, Baltimore, Cleveland in that order. Cincinnati's going to get your attention. You're on the road. You want to smack them in the mouth because they're freaking annoying. And they do that. And so then you're thinking, oh, letdown game. Nope, you've got the Baltimore Ravens coming to town, and a Ravens team that stole a win from you at home that they need to get back. And it's not just that. I mean, they have a lot to play for. But don't think the Steelers aren't sitting there thinking, man, there's no way this team should have beat us earlier, and we're going to prove them wrong. We're going to do it on a nationally televised stage. We're going to have all black on, going to look awesome, looking like Darth Vader out there. I wish every player wore those black shields on their face mask like James Harrison wears. Would make them look that much cooler, in my opinion. It's going to be fun to watch. I think the Steelers are going to have something to prove. Am I thinking it's going to be that, I think it was 2009. Earlier than that. The game where it was a Monday Night Football game where the Steelers were up 35-0 at the end of the first half. It was just an insane game. That was when Ed Reed got blown up by James Harrison on a punt return. I'm not saying it's going to be that. If it is, not going to hear any complaints from me. That was 7, exactly. So you're not going to hear any complaints from me, but the Steelers typically do well at home. They typically do well on a nationally televised stage. Like, think back to the Giants game this week. That was a nationally televised game. They typically do well when they're wearing special jerseys. I want to say they only lost two games in their Bumblebees. The record was really good in their previous throwbacks as well. Just saying. We'll see how it pans out. And I know that on Wednesday night, we'll be doing a lot more of the previewing of the upcoming matchup. We have another caller. Let's get this person on the air. 413-268-0131. You're on with Jeff and Brian. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. This is Caleb from Western Mass. How are you guys doing tonight?
What's up, man? How's it going up north?
It's cold. It's very cold. It's going well, though. I was unable to watch the game yesterday because I had a basketball game on a Sunday afternoon, which really sucked. But the game started at 1:30, and I got out around 2:30. And then I was on my phone checking the play-by-play, and it was 29 at the half, and that's when I got out of my game. So I was really upset. I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be another road choke. This is just what we need. And then I got happier and happier as we scored another field goal, and it was a great, great team win, great comeback. But you got to give credit where credit is due, and that lies on the Cincinnati Bengals for helping us out with just another miserable collapse by them. I'm really excited for the game on Christmas. Can't wait. It's going to be a classic showdown. And I hate to take it here, but I have a question. I hate to throw this circumstance even out there, but if we were to lose to the Ravens on Christmas and then win against the Browns, and let's say Baltimore beats Cincinnati, I believe that gives us the same record as Baltimore, but that would mean that Baltimore would win the division, correct?
Well, let's slow this down and look at the scenario. So you're saying that if the Steelers lose, so that means that both teams have a 9-6 record, and you're predicting that the Steelers beat the Browns, so they're finished 10-6. And that the Bengals beat the Ravens beat the Bengals, correct? So that both finished 10-6.
Yeah. Yeah.
They would win the tiebreakers, I believe, to win the division. Now, in terms of the playoff picture, there is still hope of a 6 seed. Right now, you have the Dolphins are 9-5. They have a game against the Buffalo Bills on the road next week, and they finish up with the Patriots, who probably don't have much to play for. In that final week, they have the head-to-head win over the Steelers, so you don't want to be tied with them. However, if there's a three-way tie, let's say the Denver Broncos or even the Tennessee Titans finish 10-6 as well, the Steelers could have the tiebreakers in there. But in other words, it's not a certainty that they're going to make the playoffs. So it's all in the palm of their hand right now. I wrote an article this morning. They're in the driver's seat. You know, you win the game, you clinch. You're at home. I know we had Tony Defoe who wrote a good article for the website this morning about how the Steelers can rewrite history, and he was referring to the same situation almost in 2015 when the Steelers beat the Denver Broncos at home, big second half comeback, and then they go on the road and lay a complete egg against Ryan Mallett and the Ravens, and they win their last two games against a really bad Ravens team and a really bad Browns team, and you're in the playoffs and they choked. I don't think the scenario is necessarily the same because they're playing at Heinz Field. They're a different football team. Coming off 5 straight wins is different than just winning a few. It's going to be interesting, but let's hope it doesn't come down to that. But I'm pretty sure, and I have to go back and look, that it gets really messy when you get more than two teams tied. If it's a three-way tie, it goes down to conference record and then similar opponents, and it just goes on and on. And so you really have to do – and looking at the schedules and seeing how each team did against AFC competition and like opponents and things of that nature, because if more than two teams are tied, head-to-head wins don't matter. So if the Steelers, Dolphins, and Broncos are all tied, well, that Dolphins win over Pittsburgh means nothing. So keep that in the back of your mind, too. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that. I agree with you. I think that the situation is extremely similar to last year, but again, we're playing at Heinz Field. We're on a 5-game winning streak. The momentum is there for us. The momentum isn't really there for the Ravens. They just barely snuck out a win against the Eagles, and then they lost to the Patriots. So the momentum will hopefully carry on to a Steelers victory.
I hope so, too. Well, do you have anything else before we let you go?
Nope, that's all. All right, thanks for taking my call, guys. Good night.
No problem. Hey, have a good one. Have a good Christmas, too. All right, we have another caller on the air. Let's see if we can get this person on. 646-585-0165. You're on with Jeff and Brian. Go ahead.
Jeff and Brian, what's up? This is Bryce calling from Brooklyn.
Hey, long time.
Bryce, haven't heard from you in a while. I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, I'm doing really well. It's just been really busy over here, but I had an opportunity to call in now, so I wanted to reach out. How's everyone been?
Great. 5-game winning streak. Doing good.
Yeah, five-game winning streak. I mean, the main thing I really want to talk about is I think what people, the narrative on the Steelers has been, the secondary has been the weak link. But I think even from the beginning, I think with the influx of youth and length and some speed, Cockrell's a young guy, I think the secondary has actually been pretty good for Pittsburgh. They're switching it up. Keith has adjusted. He's gone more man-to-man, allowing guys to pattern read a little bit more and play balls and get their hands on receivers, which is great. The real improvement I've seen over the five games is the pass rush. That is Pittsburgh's number one need moving forward. Even after James Harrison retires, they've got to find someone that can go with Bud Dupree and be dynamic. If they can continue to rush the passer well, that bodes well for the team. And you need a quarterback to continue to play better on the road. Ben's been too inconsistent on the road. I thought he settled down in the second half. But, I think on the road, Todd's got to do a better job of getting him in rhythm, playing a lot faster. I know Dave from the Steeler Depot podcast brought this up, and I've been telling people this too. Pittsburgh plays a little too slow. They got to play faster. I think on the road, moving in the playoffs, if they play faster, I think they can get into a rhythm and do better.
Yeah, I personally am really intrigued, and I want to talk about your pass rush. I agree, they need a pass rush. We've talked about this before. I'm really intrigued by a lot of different things in terms of the salary cap next year and the space that the Steelers have. In my opinion, this is where Omar Khan and Kevin Colbert make their money, because if you can somehow afford to franchise tag Le'Veon Bell, if that's what they choose to do. Now, I firmly believe that if they franchise him, it's to protect him from free agent vultures, and then eventually they're going to try to work out a deal possibly before the season so that then that salary cap would obviously go down, the hit would go down. But still, if they can get Antonio Brown locked up and Le'Veon Bell under contract, you could still have a free agent pass rusher be brought in that could possibly help. DeMarcus Ware even is a player that is, some would say, he's at the end of his rope. You give him a deal like you did D'Angelo Williams, he goes on a team that has a chance to win a Super Bowl, and all of a sudden you hope that he stays healthy and he could be a guy. I mean, there's talk that James Harrison wants to come back and play two more years. I don't know if he's capable of doing that. The guy's 38 years old, and I never would have guessed that the last two games he didn't even miss a snap. That's incredible to me. But that's the truth. That's exactly where we are with James Harrison now in 2016. Maybe they do bring him back on another two-year deal or a one-year deal and see what he can do. But I still think that looking at the free agency, and I have to do a lot more digging into this, I'm still too engrossed in the regular season. But they do need to find that free agent, I think. You can't always just keep going back into the draft thinking a player's going to get a walk-on and just go out and sack the quarterback with regularity. When you draft in the back end, that doesn't always happen. But to answer your second question about the Steelers' offense, I'm okay with them picking up the pace. I don't really think that's necessary. It depends on the makeup of the game. For instance, I'm giving an example. Let's say in this upcoming game on Sunday, the Pittsburgh Steelers jump out to a 17-7 lead, 17-3 even, and it seems like they have the game under control, and even in the first half, you don't want to hurry it up. You know, you want to have urgency when it's necessary. You want to be able to grind out the clock when it's not. That doesn't mean you're playing, you know, play till the play clock gets down to zero. But at the same time, I think you have to be smart about how you use it. I agree with your criticism of Haley in certain aspects. I think sometimes, and he's done this in the past, and I know Roethlisberger's done it too, they outthink themselves. They truly don't think about, in my opinion, what they get away from what's working too often, I guess is the best way for me to put it. And, you know, you look at the games, even in Cincinnati, I'm all for sticking with the run. And Le'Veon Bell getting 93 yards rushing was solid. It didn't have good yards per average, but still, I think that if they can just simplify the game plan, really look at what's working, but stay balanced, and then, you know, they can go up-tempo if they want to. My really big gripe in terms of the speed and the tempo is in the two-minute drill. They're going no huddle, but they're really not getting on the ball quickly. You saw that at the end of the first half, I think. They ended up settling for a field goal, but there was no pace at all. I mean, they were just jogging around. I think they blew 27 seconds or 21 seconds, something like that, while they were going to clock the ball instead of calling a timeout. They should have had two passes in the timeout to get the kickoff instead of get one pass. Some of that can be fixed, but that's just my opinion. Brian, what do you think?
Well, you know what? As far as the pass rush goes, I'm all for it. I know this sounds crazy. I'm all for next year going after a guy like Jamie Collins and 27 years old, throw a bunch of money at him. He's a free agent. But, you know, that might be a pipe dream at this point. But as far as the team, I agree with exactly what both you fellows are saying. I think it's just the little things. I think it's cleanup mode at this point. If you just clean up the little things, everything is there. So just do a little bit of maintenance, a little bit of tweaking. There's no reason to reinvent the wheel at this point. You have your team. This is the guy. These are the guys you're riding with. These are the schemes you're riding with. It's starting to gel. It's starting to come into fruition. You know exactly what you need to do, and you're seeing that you could run and play with teams. So just, like you said, just clean things up, tweak it, make it right, and don't try to outthink yourself, because that's what, especially during that four-game losing streak, they were trying to outthink themselves at every single aspect of the game. They were trying to prove that they were smarter than other teams. They don't have to do that. Stick with what's working and just enhance that. All you have to do, fellas.
Yeah, I think when you talk about, you know, Jeff, I agree with your point, too, about, you know, situational football, right? Like, if you're up by 20 points, you might not play as fast. But I think what 2013 showed is that when Ben gets in the no-huddle mode with the players that they have, I think they could really put the pressure on teams and get up early and break games open and take control and allow teams to play their style of football. I think particularly with the Ravens, they get into these battle of wills where the game grinds to a halt, and that favors the Ravens. Pittsburgh needs to pick up the tempo, you know, maybe throw the short game early, you know, run no huddle, you know, get the ball to Le'Veon Bell in space, and take control of the tempo of the game, and don't let the Ravens grind these games to a halt, because Pittsburgh can play like that, but they don't need to because they got the better quarterback. So I think they can do that. In terms of moving forward, I mean, at first I was like, man, what are they going to do with Bell, because they need pass rushers? But then I checked the free agency list. I'd get DeMarcus Ware on the right deal, but I would invest my money back into Bell and Brown with this quarterback, set him up to his retirement, and then, you know, find young pass rushers if you can, particularly if Dupree comes around and really shows that he can at least hold down that left side.
Yeah. Now, you know, you brought up a good point about the Ravens themselves. They pose a really unique challenge. And if you watched the Monday night game, and I was watching the game during our podcast, and I've watched it afterwards, the Patriots up-tempo style really slowed down the Ravens. The Ravens are a big team. They're not overly athletic, but they do exactly what you said. They want to grind you to a stump, and the Steelers need to do a good job of preventing that. And they can also really maximize their, you know, packages. If they go three wide, put them in a nickel, maybe even four wide, and split Le'Veon Bell. I'm really would love to see this team be able to put Le'Veon Bell in the slot and have D'Angelo Williams at running back, because if you don't have D'Angelo Williams at running back, you have Fitzgerald Toussaint. No one and their brother thinks you're going to run the football. But you put D-Will back there, and now all of a sudden the threat to run is very real. And with that being said, the Steelers now have a ton of options. And I think if you spread out the Ravens' defense, force their linebackers to cover or their safeties to come up, that's when you can do that. The Steelers' offensive line is good enough to do that. But, Bryce, you know what? I really respect your opinion. I've been asking the callers this, and I want to know your opinion. And I asked Vito this earlier. Who are you giving the rookie of the year for the Steelers to this year? Are you giving it to Burns, Davis, or Hargrave?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm giving it to Artie Burns. And the reason why I'm giving it to Artie Burns is because, you know, I think Sean Davis has done a great job at safety, but Artie Burns at corner changed the dynamic of how Keith Butler wanted to play this defense. They put him in there and said, we're going to man up, sink or swim type defense. We're going to get beat some. We're going to take advantage of this corner out here and his length, speed, athleticism. And, you know, we're going to match him up in terms of playing him the opposite side of Ross Cockrell. So I think it's Artie Burns. I think him at corner, it's a very difficult position to play. But I think he's got the right moxie. He's come in there and given them some real versatility to be able to do more things with the safeties. Because he's locked in out there. He's, you know, he's tough. He's going to compete out there. So I think it's Artie.
Yeah, it's tough. I gave my vote to
Sean. Who do you two
Davis.
Think?
I said Sean Davis. And, Brian, you said Artie Burns, right? Brian, you there?
Oh,
well, Brian,
you may have gotten
sabbatical.
So you're going Sean Davis. Why Sean Davis?
I just think that since he's come into the lineup, not only have they not lost the game, but since he's been the starter, he just has a different look about him. He's flying all over the place. I think back to that Dallas game even, him getting into the backfield and really cutting down Ezekiel Elliott. He makes plays in the run game. He's made plays in the passing game. He has an interception. He's getting after the quarterback, too. They're sending him on blitzes. They're doing stuff with rookies you normally don't see in the Steelers' defense. You know, Artie Burns isn't getting sent on blitzes too much. I don't know if he's been sent at all, to be honest with you. They're not dumbing this thing down for Sean Davis. He's a very smart player, high IQ, and I think he has the look of an all-pro. Maybe, you know, obviously not this year, but in the making. He and Mike Mitchell look very comfortable back there together. But honestly, you could make a case for all three of those guys, in my opinion. Hargrave has seen more snaps, scored a touchdown. You know, Artie Burns has more interceptions, has seen more time than Davis. But Davis, you know, he's got more tackles. He has an interception, has a sack, or at least a half sack. So you could give it to all three of those guys. But for once, it's a good problem to have that they're going to have a tough decision here on their hands with these three rookies. It's a good class.
And you know what's so amazing about this year, fellas, as far as rookies go? There have been years in the past. Think about the last time the Steelers won the Super Bowl. Can you tell me who the rookie of the year was that year in 2008?
It was Philip Patrick, something.
Patrick Bailey.
Yeah, the special teams guy, yeah.
Exactly. So there have been years that with rookie classes being the way they were, Tyler Matkavich would have even won it. And that's we have an amazing rookie class of those three. But think about, I mean, he's not going to win Rookie of the Year. But I just want to shout out to Dirty Red just for the fact that he has been all around things on special. And you've seen that number 44 flying around. I mean, what a great rookie class this has been. We've talked about the big three, but for me, it's actually a big four.
Oh, yeah, and don't forget DeMarcus Ayers, who just got promoted to the 53-man roster, and in my, a lot of people thought was the dark horse of this draft was Gerald Hawkins, the offensive tackle from LSU, who's on injured reserve. They thought that he has the look of the next left tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Some are already saying that he's going to be in a training camp battle with Villanueva at left tackle next year and only his second year. So it's impressive stuff. I mean, this is a great draft class. They could be even better in a few years, you know, if some of these guys pan out. But you got anything else, Bryce, before we let you go?
I'll ask you two a question. I know you said Artie Burns, Jeff and Brian. Brian, I'm sorry. I know you said Artie Burns. Jeff, you said Sean Davis. But let me ask you this. At the beginning of the season, who would surprise you more if they made a big impact, Burns or Davis?
Artie Burns, no doubt about it, because I just thought he was very raw. I thought he had the, you know, he had the tangibles in terms of size, length, speed, but I didn't think he had the finesse to play the position at the NFL level yet. Sean Davis, you know, living in Maryland, I saw him play a little bit more. He looked like a more NFL-ready player. So I guess in that aspect, if you're looking at it that way, I could see your vote for Artie Burns.
Right, absolutely. That's why I'm going with Burns. The fact that they put – well, A, the fact that they, you know, promoted him to the third corner showed that he must be really showing them something in practice. And then when he got the start, it's like, oh, well, we're all in now. It's sink or swim. And he's really responded well. You've seen his tackling get better and better. It was never about effort with that guy. It was more about technique. And same thing with Sean Davis. You're starting to see the fruits of them putting those guys in and saying, look, you got the pedigree. We drafted you. We're going to play you. You're either going to sink or swim.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Well, hey, Bryce, we thank you for the phone call. I hope you have a happy holidays, and hopefully we talk to you after the next game with an AFC North victory under our belt.
Yeah, I'll be there, so maybe I'll have to call in with some insights from the stands.
Absolutely. Enjoy the game, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, take it easy. Not sure you heard you there, Brian, but we have a behind the steel curtain caller who's going to be in. You know, he is going to the game. He said he's going to be there, so it should be fun. I know another one of our writers, if you follow the website, 58 Steel, he's going to be at the game. It's going to be a lot of fun for a lot of people on Christmas Day. We hope the Steelers give him a gift. Now, we're running out of time here, Brian. Quickly, I want to know what your last call is. Go ahead and talk to Steeler Nation.
You know what, Jeff? It's as simple as stay the course. Don't get fancy. Bryce brought it up very well. Don't let the Ravens get in your head and change the game. You're at home. You dictate the pace of this game, and you know their flaws. You've seen it so many times on film. You've seen it twice a year, every single year. You know how to beat this team. So you don't have to outdo anything, out-finesse them. You don't have to outthink them. You just have to outplay them, and you know how to do that. What worries me about this team from time to time, especially with the coaching staff, they go out and try to get fancy. I don't think they're going to try to do that now. I think they know exactly who they are. They have their eyes on the prize, and they're going to go ahead and take it. Then the next week against Cleveland, we are going to be cheering for Landry Jones, Fitzgerald Toussaint, Kobe Hamilton, and DeMarcus Ayers on offense. And that's what we're going to be looking at seeing. And that is my goal. My New Year resolution and my New Year wish is to see all of those guys running wild against the Cleveland Browns and see guys in hoodies named Brown, Bell, Pouncey, Roethlisberger, etc. And I think it's going to happen, and it starts this game. This game wins you the season. This game validates the season. This game is redemption for that four-game losing streak when everybody was giving up on you, including me. I was starting to give up, but you guys stayed the course. I am saying right now, I was wrong. I should have believed more. I trust this team fully now. I know exactly what they can do, and they need to show it, and they're going to look sharp in all black. That's my last call.
Couldn't say it any better. Than that. Hopefully the Pittsburgh Steelers show up on Christmas Day, give us all a great gift. They came through on Thanksgiving. Let's see them do it on the next major holiday. You know what? Make sure you check out Brian tomorrow night, Tuesday night, for his Fact or Fiction with Zach Barnes. Make sure you check out me with a special guest on Wednesday night filling in for Lance Williams up in The Standard is the Standard. And as always, we'll be back next Monday, win, lose, or draw, but hopefully after the Steelers 6th win, and they clinch the AFC North title. For Brian, I'm Jeff. We'll see you next time on the Steelers Hangover. Bye.